Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The involvement of religion in medical care and hospitalization goes back really to the very development of hospitalization, especially with the Catholic Church. Of course, over the course of history, Protestants also built hospitals, and by the first half of the 20th century, every major denomination in America had hospitals. But with the rise of contemporary healthcare and the costs associated with it, those religious affiliations with churches like the Baptists, the Methodists, and Presbyterian, to name those three, went by the wayside. The exception, though, has been at the Catholic Church, which has actually expanded its reach and coverage in America. And for a state like Oklahoma, with no tradition of public hospitals, Catholic hospitals are an indispensable part of our healthcare system, and they do a lot of great work. My guest, though, today worries about the growing influence of Catholic healthcare, especially when it concerns end-of-life, contraceptive or fertility decisions, or abortion in life-threatening conditions or treatments involving embryonic stem cells. Monica Harrington is on the board of the Center for Reproductive Rights, and she served as a senior policy officer at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She's the co-chair of the Washington State Women for Choice and is also the editor of CatholicWatch.org, an advocacy and watchdog site dedicated to fighting religiously based restrictions on health care. She was a guest of the Interfaith Alliance earlier this fall, and I spoke with her just prior to the holidays. Monica Harrington, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of your work has been looking at the impact of religious ownership of healthcare facilities, and in specific, Catholic ownership of healthcare facilities. In general, are nonprofit religious ownership of American hospitals growing or staying about the same or declining, or what exactly?
It's interesting. The Catholic systems are growing, and they're growing quickly at a time when other religious systems are declining. So, for example, the ACLU published a survey that showed that from 2001 to 2011, the percentage of non-Catholic religious hospitals declined by 41%, while the Catholic systems had double-digit growth.
Wow. That's a big difference.
It's a huge difference.
Now, why are most other denominations getting out of the hospital business, if you will, even though they're nonprofits?
Right. So one of the things that's happening in the health system generally is there's a lot of consolidation and mergers that are happening. And so the stronger systems are getting stronger. And the Catholic systems were larger to start with. And frankly, it's easier for them. First, it was easier for them to merge systems within the Catholic faith tradition. And now it's easier for them to acquire other healthcare systems because it's a hierarchical system. Mm-hmm. So if the bishops decide on a particular strategy and consolidation and growth in the healthcare sector is something that they're very clearly trying to achieve and are achieving, they can go ahead and implement. Whereas with most other religious nonprofits, the power is much more distributed. So it's essentially the same phenomenon that we're seeing in business, where big businesses are growing and they have the power to become even larger. So that's essentially what we're seeing with respect to health systems.
Now, I think we'd also see that consolidation on the for-profit side as far as just business models where you're seeing a lot of consolidation and sort of consolidation of more systems within a given community or state. Is that a fair case too?
Absolutely. So we're getting fewer individual players. It used to be that in communities across the nation, you would have community hospitals oftentimes founded by community leaders who felt it was important to take care of the local citizens and address their health care needs. Now, with all of the changes that we've seen in health care, it's the larger systems that are able to implement the technology and basically just the larger, they're just growing larger and there are incentives for doing so. And as a consequence, the Catholic systems are in a wonderful position to keep growing and to use their strength to take advantage of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, and of course, you mentioned the non-Catholic religious ownerships of hospitals declining almost by half. I would have think that the whole nonprofit ownership, regardless of religious affiliation or just whether it's a community nonprofit or something else, does that account for quite a bit of the growth of the Catholic system of hospitals? Is it just taking over other nonprofits to make sure there are nonprofit elements in a community?
Well, they're taking over nonprofit systems. And just to give you an idea, the for-profit systems nationwide make up about a quarter of the number of hospitals. This is in 2011. This is the latest year for which we've got these comprehensive statistics. So in 2011, about 25% were for-profit. So, you know, we've always had a huge number of nonprofit hospitals and nonprofit health systems, and there are many things to encourage that. What's interesting is, who do these nonprofits report to? You know, I tend to believe that it makes sense for nonprofits that are organized to address healthcare to be run by people from the community who are making decisions based upon the community's needs and desires and, you know, what's happening there. But instead, we're seeing a very centralized decision-making where people in other states, people with completely different belief systems, are able to manage healthcare systems for communities around the country.
Of course, when you get into the Catholic ownership of American hospitals, one of the big issues, and this is, I think, your ACLU report that you referred to it earlier, gets into the whole issue of the Catholics' ethical and religious doctrines and how big a role they play within the hospital administration. Now,
right.
the ERDs, as they're called, obviously play a role in contraceptives. They play a role in abortion, or abortion to save the life of a mother, or as a, I guess it can play a role at times, depending on the interpretation, on basically any sort of service that would harm a pregnant fetus within an expectant mother, as well as end-of-life decisions. What impact does religious ownership have on the delivery of health care in general?
Well, Catholic health care systems operate according to the ethical and religious directives. And this is a set of rules, as you said, that was developed and is enforced by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And the local bishops have complete authority and control to enforce these directives over the hospitals that they oversee. And so what happens in communities is that bishops get directly involved in healthcare policy. So, for example, we had a situation in Washington State where the local bishop directed the hospital in Bellingham, Washington, to no longer run tests for Planned Parenthood patients. And that was a huge problem because the community that had supported the Catholic hospital essentially becoming the only hospital in the area with a lab capable of providing those services in a timely fashion, They didn't support the idea that that would mean that certain patients couldn't have their tests run because of a bishop's religious beliefs. You know, the idea was that the members of that community wanted to support healthcare in their community. And the agreement that I think everybody thought they had with the local hospital officials was that we'll support you as long as you provide healthcare to the entire community that's based on medical best practice. And that was a situation where the bishop directly interfered to prevent certain patients from getting the healthcare procedures that they needed.
Now, is the sort of interpretation of ERDs at the discretion of a bishop or the leadership of the hospital, or is it a mutual discussion between the leadership of the hospital and the diocese itself, or what exactly?
Well, we've actually seen this play out. So the bishops have absolute authority to determine what rules need to be enforced in Catholic hospitals. So the Ethical and Religious Directives is a many-page-long document. I think it's about 58 pages long document, and it has several tens of rules. I think there are about 80 rules in the Ethical and Religious Directives. And these cover everything from contraception and not allowing vasectomies, not allowing tubal ligations, not allowing fertility treatments, to requiring that if a end-of-life directive is contrary to Catholic doctrine, it should be ignored. And these rules, essentially what happens is that if a Catholic hospital treats a patient in a way that is contrary to the ethical and religious directives, the bishop has the authority to punish the people within that Catholic system. And so, for example, a nun in Arizona who authorized an abortion to save a woman's life, essentially the woman was miscarrying, and really what we were talking about in that case was terminating a pregnancy that essentially was killing the woman. And so the nun authorized the procedure, and later the bishop excommunicated the nun.
Wow.
Yes, and, mm-hmm. and what's interesting about that is, you know, you might say, oh my gosh, well, that must be one extremely conservative Catholic bishop. But the fact is, all of the U.S. Catholic bishops voted to support the decision of that bishop. So essentially, they all said that in a case where a woman's life is at stake, she still cannot be given a pregnancy termination.
Now, I actually read some correspondence, I think, around that. That was Catholic Healthcare West. And there was a whole set of letters between the head of that facility and the bishop in which they sort of went through this dialogue. But it eventually ended with him saying, look, you're either a Catholic hospital or you're not. And that it's very interesting. If you, Google this online, you can see this correspondence. So this is, and really, it seems like there's a lot of discretion from the individual diocese in how they interpret these ethical and religious decision-making documents.
Well, it is interesting, but of course, some of the directives are so crystal clear that there's not much room for interpretation. So, for example, there's a directive that essentially says that the deliberate termination of a pregnancy is never allowed. And there's even a directive that addresses an ectopic pregnancy situation. And that directive says that...
Now explain an atopic pregnancy for those who don't know.
An ectopic pregnancy is a pregnancy that develops outside the uterus.
Right. In the tube or somewhere.
Right. And typically it's in the fallopian tube. And so a pregnancy that develops in the fallopian tube is always a life-threatening situation. And the standard of care is to do the least invasive thing possible to essentially terminate the pregnancy so that a woman's life, health, and fertility can be preserved. And yet the bishops have published a directive, it's number 48, that says, in the case of an extrauterine pregnancy, no intervention is morally licit, which constitutes a direct abortion. And the ethicists that work for the National Catholic Bioethics Center have said that what this means is that when a woman has an ectopic pregnancy, you can wait to see, how things develop. And if the pregnancy becomes life-threatening, you can remove her fallopian tube. Hmm. But you cannot do the least invasive thing, which is to actually give her a drug, which would essentially dissolve the life-threatening pregnancy.
Interesting.
And so there are lots of women across the United States who've had ectopic pregnancies, been treated at Catholic hospitals, their fallopian tubes were removed, and these women don't even understand that there was a less invasive procedure available. And that is the administration of a drug called methotrexate, which could have dissolved the pregnancy and left them with their fertility intact.
My guest today is Monica Harrington. She is a board member of the Center for Reproductive Rights and editor of CatholicWatch.org. She was a guest of the Interfaith Alliance earlier this fall for a panel discussion on religion and medical treatment. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. And one of the things she does on her site, Catholic Watch, is look at Catholic Church's influence on healthcare and especially on hospital treatment, as Catholic hospitals are growing in this country. In fact, in your home state of Washington, Monica, about 50% of the facilities are owned by Catholic institutions. Is this having an impact on Washington healthcare?
Oh, absolutely. So across Washington state, as you said, almost half the hospitals are under the control and subject to the authority of the Catholic bishops. And in many communities, the only hospital is owned and operated by administrators that essentially report to the Catholic bishop. And so what this means is that in some places, contraception cannot be, physicians are prohibited from providing contraception to their patients. Women cannot get tubal ligations at the time of a C-section, which is the, tubal ligation is the most common form of contraception for women who have completed their families.
Mm-hmm. And it's medical proven science that the best time to do that is right after the C-section.
Right. Yeah. It's the best, safest time. Incidentally, it's also the time that, from a financial perspective, makes the most sense. Because otherwise, a woman who wants to have a tubal ligation and can't have it done at the time that she has a C-section has to go in for a separate surgery later. So requiring women to undergo a completely separate surgery just to satisfy the desires or religious beliefs of a Catholic bishop just seems arbitrary and wrong.
Now, you have more than one diocese in Washington, is that right? Is there north of three dioceses in Washington?
Right, right.
Is there any difference from diocese to diocese in how the medical facilities are administered?
Well, we're seeing problems all over the state. Mm-hmm. We've seen women in Washington State who've been turned away from Catholic facilities while they're actively miscarrying. We've seen situations where a physician took a patient to the local Catholic hospital, accompanied her, and the patient had to wait for the procedure the doctor said that she needed to be approved by the local ethics board, a situation that the physician believed was dangerous. And we're seeing situations all over the state. The ACLU and some other legal groups have been collecting patient stories where patients are not getting the care that they believe they should be getting and that they're paying for. Because, again, it's really important to remember that it's not Catholic money that's paying for the services provided at these hospitals. What the Catholic Church and the Catholic bishops have done an excellent job at is figuring out how to tap into taxpayer sources of funding to essentially impose their will on people throughout a state.
So this will be Medicaid money, that sort of thing?
Well, in some cases it's Medicaid money, but in other
I would think end-of-life decisions it would be Medicare.
Right, and it's also direct tax subsidies. So, for example, in San Juan County, which is the county in the upper northwest section of the state, the local hospital there is a Catholic hospital. It's under the control and authority of the Catholic bishop in Seattle. And that hospital gets a direct tax subsidy from the local property owners. And at the time that this contract was completed, nobody in the community was informed that because it was a Catholic institution, the bishop would have complete oversight and authority for the length of the contract, which in that case was 50 years. Hmm. So they're writing these decades-long contracts where the bishops have authority over, and it's a 50-year period to decide what treatment will be provided to patients using taxpayer dollars.
My guest today is Monica Harrington. She was a guest of the Interfaith Alliance earlier this fall. She's the editor of CatholicWatch.org, which looks at Catholic administration of nonprofit hospitals in the United States. She's a board member for the Center for Reproductive Rights and our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, we've been talking a lot about the Catholics. Do other religious ownerships that have hospitals, do they often have ethical restrictions on treatment as well?
Well, it's interesting to think about what would happen, what's going to happen if we allow this to continue. Because, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, many people of that faith tradition don't believe in blood transfusions.
But and, they also don't own hospitals either, I would think.
They don't own hospitals, but there's nothing to stop them from opening up medical facilities.
Okay.
And now, essentially, what we're doing is we're giving carte blanche to anyone to open a medical facility, take taxpayer dollars, and then enforce rules based upon whatever belief system you have. As long as you say, it's a religious belief, as long as you point to religion, you can impose almost any belief system you want. So let's take an analogy. If you look at an engineering firm that wants to compete for a bridge building contract, would it be fair for somebody to say, look, I have a religious objection to using steel in the building process? That's essentially what we're doing by allowing Catholic bishops to oversee women's health care when they don't believe in the standard of care treatments that the obstetricians and gynecologists of the United States have said that women should have access to. It's a little bit crazy. It's such an integral part of a woman's health care, and these bishops believe that birth control is morally objectionable.
Now, I have to mention here in our own state, in our city, one of our hospital providers, there was a kerfluffle about a new medical center that they started administering up in Bartlesville. And at first it was said that doctors could not provide prescriptions for birth control. And in fact, they came up with a 5-page document which says that doctors can, they just can't use the letterhead of the hospital. They can't. It has to be, I believe, the issuance of prescription by employed physicians. It is the practice, I think, to tolerate but not approve, condone, or permit the issuance of prescriptions. So this is where I was asking about whether there's leeway for interpretation by the various bishops and the various hospital systems, because in this case, they don't want prescriptions of contraception going out on their letterhead, but yet the doctor may prescribe contraceptive drugs and things.
Right, and so what happens is this leads to a very dangerous and scary situation, because you actually do want medical records to accurately reflect what medicines a patient is getting. So, for example, if a woman presents with bleeding, you'd want to know what medication she's on. And if in the medical record, because the physician felt restricted from saying that the woman was on birth control or had an IUD or, you know, some other birth control, strictly because he or she knew that the administration and ultimately the bishop would disapprove, you are putting that patient's life in danger. We shouldn't be encouraging people to lie or to mislead or misstate anything about a patient's medical profile.
Well, I don't think the guidelines say that you shouldn't report it as a part of their health record. It's just that you don't make the prescription on letterhead of that health system.
Well, believe me, there's a chilling effect, because essentially what they're saying to the physicians is, we actually don't want you writing. We believe this is immoral. And, you know, as a bishop, I'm your boss. I believe birth control is immoral. I believe the implantation of IUDs is immoral. And when a physician knows that, there are all kinds of downstream effects. And I've spoken with many physicians about this. And the University of California at San Francisco has actually published now several studies related to the problems that physicians run into when they're trying to treat patients in Catholic hospitals. More than half the physicians in a survey said that they'd experience problems trying to provide women with the most appropriate care because of the rules that were being enforced.
Hmm. Well, if this is a serious situation, I mean, we need to have nonprofit hospitals, because, I mean, it's very important. One of the good things the Catholics do is that the Catholic hospitals take in patients regardless of their ability to pay. I've heard so many incredible stories of really tremendous medical care, not based on the basis of being able to pay or not. So we need nonprofit hospitals. What is the answer for loosening this effect? You know, we have a change of leadership in Rome. But it seems like that's not really an answer. It really needs to be. There needs to be equal access to, say, birth control, end of life decisions that apply equally across hospitals.
Right. And first off, I do need to correct you on one point. As it turns out, Catholic hospitals actually provide less charity care than other nonprofit hospitals. So this is something that a group called Merger Watch and the ACLU actually documented. So it's a misnomer that Catholic hospitals provide more charity care than other nonprofit hospitals. They actually provide less charity care. So we do want to support nonprofit hospitals. But it's our belief that nobody should be able to interfere in the physician-patient relationship by requiring or forbidding a physician from either forcing a physician to provide or prohibiting them from providing care that runs counter to best care medical practice. So, we really want, all of us want our physicians to be guided by medical standards, and basically we want the best care medical standards, and that means care that is based on science where there's actually been studies to prove its effectiveness, et cetera. And if we allow individual religions or individual leaders within a religion, and these are non-elected people, to enforce rules on others, you could have a situation where somebody says, the standard of care is not going to include blood transfusions. The standard of care is not going to include an amputation, even in the case of a critical accident. Can't go down that road.
Hmm. What, you know, you look at public hospitals, you know, Oklahoma is not a big public hospital state, and there's no signs that we are going to be. In fact, many of the states that do have public hospitals are oftentimes turning to private providers to administer that hospital and getting out of the public hospital business. So what's the answer?
Well, I actually think if you look at the example of whether or not a bridge, a person who contracts to build a bridge should be able to say that they won't use steel because it violates their religious belief. The fact is that when you when taxpayers are contracting for healthcare services, and all of these entities take huge numbers of taxpayer dollars, essentially our healthcare system increasingly is run on taxpayer dollars. We should be able to specify that nobody has the right to limit the services that a physician provides in ways that are counter to best care medical standards. So whether it's for religious beliefs or just because, you know, somebody has some reason that, you know, they have fears about blood transfusions, they have fears about amputations, that shouldn't guide the medical practice and the services that are actually offered to patients. The physicians who get all of the training are the ones who should be able to make those decisions in concert with their patients. And we need to look to those professional groups to be able to let us know, to help guide policy in terms of what is medically appropriate. And obstetricians and gynecologists have said, for example, that women should have access to all medically appropriate reproductive health care treatments, including birth control, including pregnancy termination services.
Well, Monica Harrington, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining us. You can learn more at catholicwatch.org. Monica Harrington is on the board of the Center for Reproductive Rights as a former senior policy officer at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. She was a guest of the Interfaith Alliance earlier this fall on a forum on religion involved in healthcare. She's also the site editor of CatholicWatch.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you'd like to hear some of our previous episodes, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.